On today's episode of Heads in the Cloud, John and I are joined by James Patrinelli of Liquid Technology. We're going to talk all things recycling, disposition,
asset management, asset destruction.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk, I got a good cell phone story for you at the end too. Stick around.
Awesome.
Heads in the Cloud with your host, David Portnowitz, Graham Potter, and John Roth.
Welcome to today's episode of Heads in the Cloud. I'm David Portnowitz.
I'm John Roth.
We're going to be joined by James Patrinelli, who is from Liquid Technology. And I got to tell you, so Liquid's in the ITAD space, which is IT asset something or other, getting rid of it, essentially. He's basically the garbage man of the IT space. So, you know, I was doing
affectionately.
I was doing a bunch of research on this space ahead of time, and it's crazy. I mean, yeah. I never really thought about the sort of the disposition, I guess, is, or the, you know, the sort of
what happens to
the equipment. And I'm interested to know how much of it is recycled versus how much of it is actually resold. Because I think if you're a company that has these assets, you'd want to try to sell, but is there value there? Is there not value there? I think it depends on sort of how old and yada, yada, yada. But I want to get into that with James and find out more about that.
It's interesting vertical.
Yeah, because you've got these massive players, which I'm sure we'll talk about with James, and you've got like specialty guys like Liquid does that are in that space like wholeheartedly. You know, how do you deal with that kind of...
Cool. I mean, I think I was reading a little bit about, you know, the tech refresh.
Most
companies are doing it every certain number of years because it gets to the point where you're...
Especially like in the...
You've written it off. Yeah. And now this is... He can come in and basically, you know, work with him. And it's like, here's some cash money, if you will.
Yeah, I wonder if they can give him like, you know, he comes in and he says like, here's, you know, you got all this stuff, you know, on selling it, we can make you X amount over the next year or whatever.
Yeah.
Like evaluate, almost like a give him an estimate.
But, well, that'd be very interesting in our partner model.
Yeah, absolutely.
To have something as a seller go, okay, I can take that money and I can go and invest in a piece of a startup.
Especially if you're a partner and you could go to a company and be like, look, I want to sell you this new server, whatever, you know, VoIP phone system, and be like, yo, in 3 years we can do a refresh and you're going to make 60% of what you bought it for. I don't know if that's the right number or not, but you can at least, you know, you have a depreciating asset, obviously. But can you make some money off of that down the road, which is sort of the ultimate?
Well, it's kind of like writing it off your taxes. After a period of time, it's like it's, okay, you've written it off.
Yeah.
And now that's when people usually buy new equipment. But they have this setup where you know that after a certain number of years, the time to get rid of it. And I think...
And I wonder if there's a sweet spot for like the number of years.
There's got to be a sweet spot. Got to be a sweet spot. But I think from a partner perspective, it's like, this could be an angle that you could go in and talk to a potential customer, every one of your existing customers.
Right.
You know?
Talk about,
Sometimes it's like you're not going to sell them all on the idea of this, but the fact that you stay in touch with your customers, always bringing something new to them, I think in our partner channel, that makes all the difference. We've seen some very successful partners that they're always in contact with their customers.
Yep.
They built that reputation.
Yeah, I mean, if you can have this as another revenue stream when you know that your customer is eventually going to be replacing equipment.
Exactly.
Then more power to you.
Yeah.
So let's get James on.
Well, James, let's
and
give him a call.
Let's see what he's up to.
You think you let me do that?
You should ask.
Okay.
I think you should call him James, but you know, you can make that decision for yourself.
Okay. Thanks, David. let's call him.
Let's give him a ring. All right, John and I are now joined by James Patrinelli of Liquid Technology. James is the Director of Sales in the Northeast. Thank you so much for joining us today, James.
David, John, pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, do you go by James or do you go by Jimmy?
I go by James. Thanks for asking.
Okay. Sometimes you never know.
You know what? Can we just call you Jimmy?
No, we're going to call him James.
Okay.
He says no.
Okay.
He says no.
We like to add nicknames, so I'm going to probably call you Jimmy the whole show. Okay.
No problem. Okay. My kids sometimes pull that on me, so I'm used to it every now and again. Okay.
So, James, you're from Liquid Technology. Tell our listeners a little bit about Liquid Technology, because I think the ITAD industry, which I think maybe you can help give some background to, is something our partners are peripheral, or sort of on their peripheral, but not something they focus on. But I think it's something that they should be focusing on. So I'm interested to sort of hear your take on Liquid Technology and where it fits in the ITAD space.
Sure, of course. And you know, just want to let you guys know, I've been listening to your show. I really love it. And I think this would really fit into the channel show that you guys had the other day, a couple months ago. So,
well, thanks. We appreciate you listening.
Of course. So Liquid Technology is a full service ITAD company. And for your listeners who aren't aware, ITAD is IT Asset Disposition Services. And really that is handling, a company handles anything that is end of life technology for Fortune 1000 companies, basically anybody that has technology hardware. And ITAD is really composed of three main things. The buying and brokering of excess or obsolete technology hardware, media destruction services. So that's, you know, either wiping or shredding of hard drives and providing auditable reporting for that. And then lastly, for any technology hardware that can't be resold, compliantly breaking it down by commodity type and recycling it, making sure that none of it is put in landfills, making sure that none of it is sent overseas.
Okay.
So I'm just going to say this. So you guys are sort of the glorified garbage men of the IT industry. Is that correct?
You know, people call us that for sure. But when we're handing them checks for their excess hardware, they really do like us. They don't call us garbage men after that.
No, it's a fascinating space, especially with the rise of IoT and things like that. I would imagine that sort of the two biggest things that come up are, you know, how do you properly recycle the right, you know, the items, especially with IoT type stuff, and two, security and risk and things like that. Are those sort of the two biggest areas of concern?
Absolutely. And, you know, what we've seen, one of the biggest trends we've seen recently is companies onboarding sustainability officers. You know, you didn't have that 10, 15 years ago, where you have actual C-level individuals and organizations who actually oversee where every single commodity, whether it be from the cafeteria or from the IT department, where all that downstream goes. So we are lucky to have two of the highest certifications in our industry for e-waste recycling, and those are E-Stewards and R2, both recognized by the EPA. And we are audited for the processing of our technology hardware. Whatever we don't resell, we have to be able to prove where all of our heat sinks go, where all of our plastics go, basically what they call focus materials, batteries, things like that. And once we get rid of it, we need to know where it goes to the next vendor, and on down the line. So really making sure that, you know, we're committed to sustainability, committed to making sure that everything's recycled properly.
I have a question. So I'm just thinking of this. We're talking hardware, we're talking batteries, hard drives, we're talking physical material, but do you have customers that say that they have stuff stored in the cloud that they want to destroy as well or get rid of? Does that fall into your space at all? Because that seems a little scary to think that you're going to be responsible, and really it's somewhere sitting in the cloud on a server. Can you take us through that? How would that work?
Well, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody who works for a large cloud migration company the other day, and we were joking. You know, the cloud is still on a server. So, you know, whether it's just somebody else's server.
Correct.
So, you know, we are always working with cloud migration partners and helping their clients in the cloud migration process. However, you know, the cloud companies, they're moving all the consumer data, the customer data into the cloud and helping them manage the workloads up there. Once all that information's off the client's owned servers, that's when we come in and we'll actually deinstall the data centers, take all the servers away. Whatever remaining data is on those hard drives and servers, we'll destroy it to whatever requirement that they have. And then we'll begin the process of either reselling their hardware or recycling it properly.
Okay.
Yeah, so that leads me to the question about reselling it. You mentioned checks at the beginning when you know no longer the garbage man when they hand them a check. So how much is resold versus how much is recycled nowadays?
You know, it really depends on the life cycle of the client's hardware. You know, clients who are on a pretty regular refresh, whether it be, you know, 3 to 4 years, they could typically expect a return on their investment for their hardware. When you start getting to over 5 years old, you know, at that point in time, the remarketing value of equipment kind of tends to fall off. We're always trying to, you know, find ways to either provide a return on the full working unit, or once we start breaking things down by components, selling processors, RAM, hard drives, we're always trying to return value to the client. And I'd say over 90% of our clients, we do that.
That's fascinating, really, because, you know, you would think that the material on it is probably, if you're getting rid of it, it's probably just for recycle. But I would say that, like, trying to find value in that material is something that is not accounted for or thought of at the beginning. So it's probably, you guys are probably like a great surprise for a lot of CFOs and things like that come around and say, oh, we can actually get some value out of this old equipment. That's incredibly important to them. So how do you show that value? How do you, what's your, you have like an ROI calculator or sort of, you know, how do you prove out that method?
Well, most of our clients, we consign with them. So they're under an agreement and, you know, they just tell us, you know, anytime that they have equipment coming out of a data center or corporate environment, they just tell us to go grab the hardware and then we bring it in-house. We test it. We provide the media destruction. We provide them with inventory reporting so they could send it back to their accounting department and make sure all the equipment's off the books. And then we sell through the equipment and send them sales reports each month. That's a typical client. However, a company is, you know, they just upgraded their infrastructure 2 years ago, but they made a corporate decision to move to the cloud. That's when we kind of sit with them. We go to their various facilities, we inventory the hardware, and we can provide upfront valuations to let them know, you know, this is the exact number that you're going to get back at the end of the day based on market conditions for the hardware that you have.
Do you provide recommendations on what kind of equipment they should get moving forward as like, how, you know, this kind of stuff will get the biggest return down the road? Or is that not something you guys dive into at this point?
That's not something we really do, but we do provide valuations if they ask us. And, you know, they may say, you know, should we make our buying decisions now or before the end of the year? Will this equipment retain value if it's April? Will there be ROI at the end of the year that I can apply towards the purchase of new hardware? Or if I hold on to it too long, will it completely lose its value? And is it best for me to get rid of it at this point in time? So that's usually when we act as a consultant in that capacity. Mm.
It's really, really cool stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you basically go in and go, okay, this is a time you're going to lose more value. If you don't get rid of it this year, the value is going to drop drastically next year. So it's kind of like end of life and amortization. You're ready to move on. You make those decisions and help customers make those decisions as well.
That's correct. And that's really what we're doing with, you know, we have our ITAD division, but we've really focused on pushing what we call our cloud last solution. And that's for companies that are going to the cloud. And that's exactly what we're doing with the company. So once they make the decision to go to AWS, Azure, or Google, we actually come in with their cloud migration, whoever's going to assist them with that migration process. And we look at their project plans with them and we say, you know, here's where the bulk of your value is. As you're migrating your information off these servers, don't wait till the end of this year to get rid of the hardware. You know, let's remove them on a scheduled basis as the migration is happening so you could get the highest return of value for your equipment.
As new devices, new IoT devices come on every day, it seems like, how do you guys define a new process for, let's say a company all of a sudden's got a microwave that talks to their servers or whatever, you know, what do you guys come up with a new process for each of those devices? How are you working through that? It seems like it would be an ever growing library of sort of, you know, things you have to worry about and concern yourself with everything being so, you know, being smart nowadays. I mean, that just seems befuddling to me.
Absolutely. You know, compliance is our main concern. So when companies have information on any type of device, we have to make sure that it's compliantly destroyed. So whether that's an old 3.5 spindle hard drive from a PC, or whether that's a, you know, a flash chip in a phone or a flash hard drive in an Apple laptop, we need to be able to make sure that we know that there's media, that we're pulling it, destroying it properly, and that we're providing our client with auditable report to show them that media is being destroyed. So, you know, if there is a hard drive in that talking toaster, we got to make sure that we identify it, that we pull it and we destroy it, and that the client knows about it.
Interesting.
That's crazy. Do you work closely with the manufacturers of these devices? And are you like sort of in conversations with those folks to understand where the data is, how it's stored? Those kinds of conversations are taking place in the back end, I'm assuming.
No, we typically don't work with the OEMs. I mean, we are, you know, part of a, we're certified by the National Association of Information Destruction.
Oh.
So basically we're audited by them on how we destroy our media. So as, you know, new media comes out in the marketplace and, you know, we have to, you know, be audited for the destruction of that. You know, we look to our organizations like that, to e-stewards on the proper way to destroy the media and make sure that we're providing the reporting that's needed to back that up.
I'm just picturing that it's a big cauldron at the bottom of your building. And that's where it goes.
A very big industrial shredder for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking that from our partner perspective, it would be you knowing of opportunities come up that, you know, a company is going to be getting rid of all the servers. They're going to be trying to go completely to the cloud through maybe Citrix, if you will, because they're one of our partners. Do you work with companies to basically say, you know, interchange information, network, and say, I know some companies that you might want to work with. going forward after you get rid of the older technology?
Of course. I mean, you know, partnerships are one of the greatest ways to grow business. And, you know, we go to all the Amazon, Google cloud events. We're talking to their certified partners. They want to know if we know when companies are planning to go to the cloud. And likewise, we want to know when the company decides to go to the cloud. So we're always continually talking with the salespeople, business development executives. And partnerships are a very important part of our business.
But that's not part of your model. Your model is you're going to take that equipment out. You don't go into the next level and say, I can also sell you cloud environment.
We are strictly an ITAD company. Okay. And what's nice about that is we're not stepping on anybody's toes. So we can work with anybody, any partner, as long as they're not in ITAD space. You know, we can provide that service for their clients. It's a great value add at the end of the day. They could provide their service and say, and by the way, if you want to get money back for your hardware at the end of the day, here's a good person to speak to.
Yeah. So for our partners, let's say we've got, you know, a typical MSP. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they provide network security. They provide UCAS. They provide, you know, VDI. You know, they're doing any type of those sort of recurring SaaS platform models. Could they sell your services along with, you know, what they're currently selling, or would they partner with you to do that, like to do the work for the ITAD stuff? Like, you know what I mean? Do you guys have a partner model, or is it more direct to consumer, or do you work through any of those type of channel partners?
Oh yeah, no, we're happy to work in either capacity. Certainly. So if they wanted to make the introduction to their client, that's certainly fine. But if they want to work on a partnership agreement, we're happy to do that as well. Of course.
Because it seems like our partners would really benefit from having this as another service, you know, another thing they can add to their bottom line. You know, they're already dealing with the consumer's network and having, you know, they're going to want to talk to them about doing a refresh and things like that. And if they can come in and be like, you know what, we also can do the disposal of your current materials and we can help you make some money off of them. I mean, that to me seems like a win-win.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the best ways to grow the business. I think it's been working out really well for us.
Oh. So how do you deal with a company like Dell? Because, for example, like Dell is going to sell the computer, right? You know, for a home network or even a business. And then they're also, I mean, I would guess ITAD is part of what they do. Maybe not a huge part like, you know, it is for you guys. But, you know, is that something that you worry about, or are they sort of more in the periphery? Or how do you deal with a company like that?
Well, I mean, I don't deal with Dell directly. I think it's really, you know, me talking to the client and saying, you know, here is the benefits of using a company like Liquid Technology. In terms of always maintaining the highest standards for media destruction and compliant e-waste recycling, dedicated account management, and you know, basically picking up the phone, talking to one individual to be able to handle all the removals for all your sites, either nationwide or globally. I can't speak to what Dell does, but all I can say is, you know, in terms of our process, procedure, and expertise, it's completely ITAD. So if that's what they're looking for, you know, I think we do a really good job with that.
How do you basically go about, and say you wanted to go prospecting, what would be a good fit for your company? What would you look for?
The type of customer.
The type of customer. Like, and you know, there's just so much data out there on companies that you can buy. What do you look for?
You know, the beauty of our business is everybody has technology. So I could call on anybody, which is great. You know, obviously we like to work with companies that have a little bit bigger headcount because, you know, economies of scale help us do larger projects. But, you know, everybody has technology. So, you know, when I pick up the phone, if I can get a hold of an IT manager or data center manager, tell them what we do, ask them if there's a need, I'm sure there's going to be a fit at some point in time. Most people have a refresh within 3 years. So we just keep in touch. You know, we were born in New York City, so, you know, we're very heavy in the financial space. And now that New York's really the number one tech hub in America, you know, we're very, very big in the tech industry as well.
Okay.
I'm sure you were kind of sad when Bezos decided not to come in there, huh?
Honestly, you know, there are people look at it both ways. I was very disappointed. It would have been great to have them here, but they're still going to take plenty of space on the west side now, so I'm not concerned.
Yeah, you should take Hudson Yards and you should just throw it all out, by the way. That place is, there's no need for that in the city.
It's amazing. I walked through there a couple of weeks ago. It's unbelievable how much growth there is on that side of the city compared to what it was 10 years ago. It's amazing.
I was just there like 2 weeks ago and I had a free morning. So I was staying on sort of the lower west side. So I walked over there and I was like, I'm just going to check this out. It's like, it's just it's basically Columbus Circle on the lower west side. I mean, it's like the same stores, the same stuff. This is a complete waste of space. Sorry for Hudson Yards people, but that's my take.
We just lost three of our listeners. I'll tell you that. Thanks, David.
We're never getting a reservation at David Chang's new restaurant there either.
Restaurants are not going to be able to get into that.
No, but to follow up on John's question, you mentioned the finance sector being an industry that would probably be really benefit from, because there's so much data there and so much private secure data there. Are there other industries that you guys really focus on and really target? I would imagine
medical.
Yeah, I was going to say medical would be another space that would be you're looking for refresh a lot.
You know, healthcare and insurance are really concerned about HIPAA guidelines. So they're going to want, they're not going to just want media destruction. They're going to want it at their facility, at their loading dock, shredding truck right there so they could witness it. The financial clients, they usually have, higher end technology for trading, things like that. So they want to be flipping their equipment on a regular basis. They're also concerned about media destruction. And then you have the younger technology companies. They're really concerned about sustainability. Their mission is, to be a better, citizen.
Right.
So they care more about that e-waste recycling.
So from an infrastructure standpoint, I imagine, do you guys have like this big warehouse where you take all this stuff to, or is it sort of dispersed across the country?
I don't think he can tell us. I just saw the look in his eye. And I think it's a big secret stuff goes. Right. Yeah,
I'm just fascinated by the whole process.
Tell us, Jimmy, where is it?
You need a lot of space. You need a lot of power. And you need a lot of security because you're handling media. So, within every warehouse that we have, secure rooms with secure cages, box in a box in a box where, only certain people have access to handle that, the shredding and wiping of hard drives. It's a lot of space, a lot of power, and a lot of security.
That seemed we need to. I think we need to go on a tour of that facility.
I think we need to have a podcast. We have a podcast in one of the inner rooms.
You guys host your own podcast, right? You guys have a podcast at Liquid Tech?
That's correct. We have a podcast called TechBench Podcast. It's on iTunes, on Stitcher, and SoundCloud. And basically, we talk to people in technology fields, people who are in our industry, who are work on the basically create the certifications in our industry, partners who are in the data center space, partners who are MSPs and who are in data recovery. Basically, all the people that we work with, refer business to and from, come on the show, talk about technology. It's great.
Cool.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Much like yours.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now, if you see a hard drive out in the ether, you're walking down the street. You're in Brooklyn. You see a hard drive. Does that make you so? Are you saddened by that?
Quarantine, put the red phones up. Hazmat the whole night.
Someone abandoned this poor hard drive. We could do so much with you.
When you're in this business, what you get a lot is family members. What do I do with my hard drive?
Yeah.
Can I give you my computer? So, really, a lot of people ask you for advice. And, what I typically tell them is, make sure that your media is being destroyed by, somebody who has a stake, who actually, has either insurance for this, who you actually physically see it being done. So if you're not working with my company, definitely make sure you're working with a certified high tech company for sure.
We have a hard drive thing here, John. Have you seen it?
Yes, we do. Yes.
It's like a hard drive crusher.
Yeah, but they take the handle away, because how many people would try to crush it? Could they take, it's like that big jack hammer.
Yeah. I've never seen it happen.
Yeah, I want to see it happen too.
We need to have a live demo of that.
There's a desk dedicated to it.
Yeah, there's a desk. We have a whole desk with a hard drive crusher on it.
Yeah.
Man, that looks
fascinating.
Cool.
We should probably work with a company like yourself, I think.
Absolutely.
The shredders are more fun. You should get one of those.
Could you shred a cell phone?
You can't. There's certain, so you have to be very careful about that. So you want to shred the SIM cards, and because you can't shred batteries and you can't shred the LCD screens. So you actually have to take apart the cell phone and shred the components within there that would hold the media.
Yeah.
Wow.
Shredder could shred it. Remember Shredder from the Ninja Turtles? He could shred anything.
Oh, of course. Wolverine too.
Wolverine. Good point.
Wolverine.
John's for the audio, for our audio meeting here. John's doing his best Wolverine impersonation. Here.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about you. How did you get started with Liquid Technology? How did you get into this space?
Out of college, I have a degree in information technology. I wasn't really strong in coding. I didn't do real well at that. So I went into the financial space. And then after a couple of years of being in that, I decided to get back in technology. And this industry was just becoming really being born, I'd say, in the early 2000s when I joined it. And that's when, you know, there were organizations that were kind of setting the standards for how to destroy media properly, how to recycle properly. And, you know, I've basically been in the industry for, I'd say, 15, 16 years now.
That's awesome. And you live in Connecticut? You're out in Connecticut?
That's correct. Live in Connecticut, work in New York City.
Move to the burbs.
Yeah, I got to get out of the city.
No, I get it. Yeah. I get it. Little Jimmy from Brooklyn has gone to the burbs, right?
It's the best when you're young, but once you have kids, you can't be in the city. It's too much.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Well, James, we really appreciate you coming on. John, you got a question for James?
I do. Yeah, and James, I'm going to call you Jimmy. I feel it so natural. Okay.
I knew that was coming, John.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, this is a question that we're probably going to retire after this show.
I think you're our last person we're going to ask.
Our last person. So this is kind of a monumental question. It's
a fond farewell.
We're going to move on after this.
You got any suggestions for new questions? Please let us know.
Yeah. Because we stumbled before this show trying to figure out a new question. We figured we're going to end this show with the question we always ask. So, Jimmy, what's your favorite sandwich?
My favorite sandwich. You know, just an Italian combo. Real simple. Can't really go wrong with that.
Is it heated?
Yes, with a hot sopressata.
Oh, yes. Okay. So pressed Italian sandwich from Subway.
Subway's no.
Yeah, where do you go to get it?
Brooklyn. You come to Brooklyn. You know, I'll take you out to a couple of good sandwich shops.
And how do you dispose of the trash properly?
By a certified Department of Transport Sanitation.
The person that works at the deli, they take care of it for you. They're certified in removing it.
So a nice Italian, you got hot sopressata. You got to have some deli. You got to have some pickles. I don't know.
Yeah,
pickles.
You got to have the balsamic, the homemade balsamic.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
There's a really good sandwich shop here in Sarasota that serves it's a prosciutto with fresh mozzarella with a balsamic reduction and a roasted red peppers.
Ooh.
Man. Okay.
Well,
maybe I'll come visit you guys.
Come on down. We'd love to have you.
I think you should. Well, just to state from an old Seinfeld episode, Jimmy like Italian subs, right? Third party.
I don't think that was the line, but I think it works.
Well, it Jimmy like that. Okay.
Oh, man.
And
James.
The second question, David.
Oh, yeah, second question. This is the last time we're asking this one, too. This is our final one. So, James, do you have any pets?
Yes, I have one dog that's 13 years old, a rat terrier named Molly.
Ooh, Molly the rat.
Molly the rat terrier.
Molly the rat, yes. She's not the prettiest thing. My kids love her to death. So
I love how you just state that from the top. You know, she's quite ugly, but we love her.
She's got issues, but man, if I get rid of her, my kids will kill me. Yeah.
Well, James, we really appreciate you giving us this time today. This is a fascinating space, and I think it's something our channel partners, if they're not doing today, look up Liquid Technology, hit us up. We'll connect you with James. You guys should be doing this. It is something that, you know,
it's a perfect fit.
Your customers are going to be doing. Why not make some additional dollars on it? So, thanks again for joining us, James. Enjoy that nice northeast cool air while it's still up there, because it's going to be hot soon.
Thank you, James.
David John, it's been a pleasure, and look forward to grabbing a sandwich with you guys.
Absolutely. Right. Next time we're in the city.
Thank you.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Bye now.
Take care.
That was interesting, right?
Yeah, it was quite interesting.
I didn't know there was a space.
I mean, there's a vertical, but there's a vertical for about anything.
And in the lead up to the podcast, I was doing a bunch of research, and I got into the space, and I was looking at Gartner and what they said. And it's just fascinating how much it's evolved in like 10 years, right? Yeah. I mean, it's really, really come on fast. We got big companies like Iron Mountain, which is this billion-dollar company that does this. It's like a part of what they do. Companies like Dell, which has this program, which is probably more for branding for them than anything, to show that, hey, we're a recycling company, you know. But Liquid Technology, they mean they're really focused on it. That's what they do. It's all they do. It's their primary focus. So if you're a partner and you're looking for that, you want to look for a company like Liquid, because they're the ones who are going to really help you through that process.
Yeah, I think from a partner perspective, what a great different angle to try to find some new customers. You're looking for a tech refresh. Well,
but every single your current customers,
exactly.
Yeah, you could leverage this on. So I think that's fascinating.
Because eventually they will have to do it.
And they're gonna outsource it anyway. So why not, as you as a partner, why don't you handle it?
Don't give it to Bobby down the block. Yeah. Here, think that Bobby's gonna take
I don't even like Bobby.
I don't like Bobby. He's kind of a little shady. I don't even give him a hard drive.
kind of look at everything on it.
Yeah.
So he mentioned, you know, I sort of joked asking about, could you shred a cell phone? And he said, you got to take it apart. And it made me think about when I was in college. Do you remember maybe like 15 years ago, it was really popular with these Nextel phones? Remember the Nextel phones? And they had like a walkie-talkie feature?
Yeah.
And people were sort of talking.
Two-way.
It's like two-way paging or two-way talking. Yeah. But it was like you wouldn't call someone. You just like sort of like beep them and you could have a conversation. They were really annoying. Well, at the time, it was also really fashionable to like add, if you were like a 20-something or, you know, even, you know, in your teens, you could take the phone apart and you could add like lights and like all sorts of stuff to it. So I worked at this store in the mall, like, you know, the kiosk in the mall that like sells cell phone accessories.
Sure.
So I worked at one, it'll remain nameless, in the mall in Gainesville, by the way, where I once saw William H. Macy walking through.
He works at the car wash down the street.
William H. Macy?
Yeah.
I don't think so. We used to take cell phones apart. And so basically, people would come in and they'd say, I want, you know, my Nextel. I want to put this case on it with, you know, the Gators logo, and it's going to have orange and blue flashing lights, and take the antenna off and replace. And we would sell all that and we would make commission on the sale. We'd have to actually take the phone apart, though, and then put it back together.
Right.
We had a sign, not responsible for damage if your phone doesn't work. So if we took the phone apart and then put it back together,
didn't work.
Not our problem.
Not your problem.
So people would come in, they'd ring your phone, they spent $150 on lights and flashing batteries, anything. I'm talking about anything. We take the phone apart. I mean, when I take the phone apart, I mean, take a screwdriver, peel the screen off the thing. I mean, we're talking about these little tiny, you know, delicate pieces of equipment. It was me.
What was the survival rate?
It was me. It was the two owners of the company who owned a bunch of these kiosks in different malls.
Right.
And then basically me and another part-time guy who would work the kiosk. So the training there was nascent. Right? It was like, watch us how to do it once and then just do it. Learn on the job. So we'd go in there, and whenever anybody would buy one, I would be terrified. Because it's basically on you to take this phone apart. You're doing surgery on a cell phone.
Yeah.
And put it back together and pray to God that it worked when it came back on. And the worst, generally it was all right. The worst was if you just pushed a little too hard on the little screen, when you put it back there, the screen would have like lines in it, or, you know, it's like a little LCD or something. And we had replacement screens we could put in, but every one we put in, we had to pay for out of our, you know, it cost us out of, it was a whole thing. So got pretty good at it, was doing fine. We had a, next to us, next to the kiosk was a, like a Bath and Body Works kind of store, you know, they had a phone drive once where you could bring in, like recycle your old phones.
Oh, okay.
So in the back of their store, they had all these old phones. So for a long time, if someone brought in a phone and we were trying to fix it and then it didn't work, I went to the Bath and Body Works into the back of the store. I'd try to find one of the phones. I'd pull it out. I'd take the stuff out and I'd put it in and I'd replace it on another phone.
Wow. So you were in that space a long time ago.
I was like, this was like in 2003, 2000, somewhere around then. It's like 15, 16 years ago. But anyways, Nextel came out with a new phone, and they had these new lights that we were going to put on it. But I refused to do the lights because it was so delicate. Every single one I did would break. And then I just ended up quitting. I couldn't deal with the stress. I had to go work. I went to work at Best Buy, much less stress. You know, I could just kind of lollygag around, you know, kind of walk around. I was trying to sell some TVs, some monster cables. Much easier than trying to disassemble and reassemble a phone. Trust me, every time I went to work there, and you know, you never think of the plight of the kiosk worker, because the kiosk worker is there by himself. What if the kiosk worker has to get, what about when they want to eat? Go to the restroom.
I've seen them
out of luck.
They have to go to the bathroom, right?
Right. I have to call the Bath and Body. This is a true story. Call the girl over from the Bath and Body
just
Works.
Stand here for five minutes
while I go get a Chick-fil-A, and I'll be right back.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyways, that's my cell phone story.
That's your cell phone
You have
story.
One too?
Oh, I have one. It's a very old, dumb thing I did years ago. I dropped my phone into some water and got a little moist, and I thought, put it in the microwave for about 2 or 3 seconds.
Microwave?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I've heard of rice. Never heard of the microwave.
No, I did the microwave, and it just went poof, and my daughter went, Dad, you can't do that.
Did it blow up?
No, it just smoked. A little, only 3 seconds.
You put it in the microwave for 3 seconds.
I did. I thought that was, and I thought after I pushed the button, I went, that's not a good idea.
So you basically, your idea in your head was, this is wet.
Just
the microwave's going to heat it up.
Just enough to, yeah, it didn't.
So you tried to microwave a cell phone.
Yeah, I did, David. I'm not proud of this.
not your finest moment.
Not my finest moment.
I wonder what James would say about you microwaving your cell phone.
Well, Jimmy would probably not be happy. Jimmy wouldn't be happy with that.
I don't think he'd be happy because you're calling him Jimmy would be the first.
He was okay with it. I think so.
I don't know. Maybe Frederick should follow up, make sure we call him James.
I'll call him, make sure I didn't offend him by calling him Jimmy.
Liquid Technology, fascinating company, absolutely. Really cool space. I would assume that space is going to grow and grow and grow.
But they really specialize. It's not like, you know, the Iron Mountain, which does
a million different things.
Shredding, yeah. And they come in, but, you know, they are very specialized, and it's like you have to be certified to do the certain things that they do, and you got to account for it, and you have to.
Well, he was even mentioning, you know, when you dispose of it, you've got to know what the company down the line and down the line and down the line from them was doing with it, which is, I mean, how you can know those things, but you can't be responsible. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
So anyways, really cool
space,
stuff.
So, yeah.
Great episode. I enjoyed it. Got anything else you want to add? Or are we good?
David, that was awesome.
All right. For Heads in the Cloud, I'm David Portnowitz.
I'm John Ross.
And we'll see you next time.